John, why don't you start with questions you think are appropriate?
Well, what I've heard about Slater was he came here, and when the railroad came in 1884, he was told that the railroad depot would be across from his building. Was that correct, or is that erroneous?
Well, there is a building, Slater Building.
Yeah.
On Jefferson. Yes.
Uh-huh.
That must have been the building they're talking about.
Jefferson and what? What other street?
Fur. Fur.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that a two-story building?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Two-story building.
Mm-hmm. Is it gray now?
I think so. Oh, it's a concrete building,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Somebody told me there was a brothel upstairs there.
Well, there could have been that far before my time.
Well, I don't know about that. I know Giddings and Lynch had their car dealership there and the building next door.
Well, the building where the old Safeway building is, I understand, has had underground tunnels and things because it was on the edge of Chinatown.
Did you ever hear very much about the Chinese who lived here?
No, I didn't. My grandmother taught school, first grade at Riveria. She was one of their first, she was their first teacher and principal. And she had quite a few Orientals in her school, and she has lots of, or had lots of things that were given to her as Christmas gifts, and out of the ordinary.
What did she say about those children?
Well, I can't remember. I know she got an awful lot of gifts and things like that from silk handkerchiefs. And I know she has a beautiful one that lined a tray that she had. Do such beautiful work. The reason that Mr. Slater was not only important to LeGrand, but he was important to the state of Oregon because he you can read in that article the number of things that he had done, had been, positions he's held, and legislation that he was interested in, and so forth. And he had come from Illinois, I believe, and was as a young man. I think he's probably maybe 19 years old or so, but drove oxen for a family that was coming west.
That would have been what, in the 1860s or so?
Well, it's in there.
Okay.
And some of them decided to go south to the gold fields. And so he was there for a couple of years. And then he went up to Oregon to Marysville, which is now Corvallis. And eventually, after being in Oregon, in that part of the state, he came to Austin, which is in eastern Oregon. And is it in Grant County?
Yes.
It was a gold mining town. And then eventually to LeGrand.
Uh-huh. And again, we're talking about James Austin, who was your great-grandfather?
James H. Slater.
Slater, yes. Austin, you said Austin.
Well, Austin is the town.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. James H. Slater.
Harvey. James Harvey.
Okay. Slater. And he was your great-grandfather on your mother's side.
My mother's side. And while he was in Marysville or Corvallis, he married. And he married Edna Elizabeth Gray, whose brother also came west, but I don't, and I think they came from Tennessee, but I'm not sure. There's other family in the valley that you can talk to about the Grays, because Mrs. Gray's, Mrs. Slater's brother, George Grant Gray, settled in Cole, and there's lots of they had 10 children too, and there's lots of relatives out there.
Do you know about when that would have been?
No, I don't. I'm not familiar with all of the dates.
Do you think this article states most of what needs to be known about what James H. Slater accomplished?
No, it does in a general way.
Okay. He
was an attorney, but he didn't go to law school as such, I don't think. His sons, they had 10 children, 5 boys and 5 girls, and 3 of the sons were lawyers, and 3 of the girls were teachers. And it talks in there about what the others did.
Do you have other letters or documents that would say more about him?
Not at hand, no. But I think since my mother was president of the Union County Historical Society for quite a long while, I think the Union Museum might have more.
We'll look there. Now, would it be appropriate to talk about your experiences as an employee at the Eastern Oregon State College? Do you want to talk about that?
Well, it was the most important thing in my life, except my family.
Yes. How did you happen to be hired there?
Well, I graduated from a 2-year junior college program. Thought I'd go on to Oregon State or someplace to school, but my family couldn't afford it, and I got married instead.
But did that include some secretarial work?
Yes. It was nearly all secretarial work.
So you were qualified to get the job?
Well, I didn't have any secretarial training except what I'd gotten in high school.
Oh, I thought you said the college included it. In secretarial training, no?
Not at that time. They do now, but not at that time. It was teaching or junior certificate.
What year was that?
Oh, I graduated in 1936 in June and was hired in August. And I was sort of jack of all trades at first. My time, FDE, they called it full-time equivalent, was divided about 3 ways. But in 1955, I actually was appointed full-time as secretary to the president, although I'd worked for all of them so far, except one.
And all these places, or all these people you worked in, or offices you worked in, were in Low Hall, were they?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you describe how Inlow looked at that time on the inside?
Well, it was a very nice building, and at the time it was built, it also, and besides the college faculty, included the elementary school.
Mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. And the library, and the theater, and the lab.
And the gym, I mean, where you took your showers after being out on the field. And then the first building that was built after the Inlow Hall was built was the Ackerman Elementary School, and the little gym that was attached.
Would you describe the Inlow Hall at that time as very modern inside?
Well, for that time, yes.
Mm-hmm. For that time. It was a comfortable place to work?
Yes, it was.
It wasn't air conditioned, was it?
No. I'm not sure it is now.
I think it must be now. Do you recall some of the maybe most memorable kinds of activities you were involved in there, especially when you were in the president's office?
Well,
were there crises or emergencies or
students getting called in? Yes, there was some of that. Mm-hmm.
And you experienced it directly, I suppose.
Well, not really. Until 1955, when I actually spent full time in the president's office, I was involved more with student concerns. I worked in the registrar's office and in the business office and in the alumni office, which was one.
What did you do during a typical day in the president's office?
Well, I'd come in, it depends on which president, but the last one I made, first thing I did was make coffee.
At 8 o'clock in the morning?
8 o'clock in the morning, made coffee. Because he drank coffee all day. open the mail, make calls, make appointments, answer the telephone. We had the copying machine. I did my share of working with that.
We got the purple Ditto.
Yeah, at that time it was. And,
did you do a lot of typing?
Yes, quite a bit. And
did you have to make carbons for everything?
Lots of carbons. And we used onion skin paper.
Mm-hmm. And so if you made a mistake, you had to go through and erase single one individually?
Wait on callers, make appointments, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. What was interesting about all that?
The contacts with the people, the faculty, or the faculty's mail room was quite handy, and so it was where people standing around and listening, that sort of thing. Didn't do too much for my concentration, but...
What was interesting about what they said?
Well, most of it was old professional talk of the class, maybe discussing a student or two or things like that. I had to be sure that I didn't repeat what I heard.
You heard a lot of confidential information, I suppose.
Yes.
And would that have been more interesting to you than, attending some women's club meetings downtown?
Well, I'd think so, yes.
Yes? You weren't a women's club joiner much?
Well, I have been, but more so after I retired. So I didn't have time. During those years, I had four children. And my husband was a railroader, a conductor whose schedule was very erratic, as you know. And we worked around it.
Were you paid well?
Well, it was a state position. It was in the going wage for state employees, which was as good as most.
And you had retirement from it, I suppose.
Yes. Yes, I did. State retirement. Which I read in the papers these days is in trouble.
Who were some of the faculty members you remember best?
Well, Amanda Zabel, who's one of the newer buildings is named for.
Yes.
Zabel Hall.
Yes.
And Ralph Badgley, who's also in the building named after him. Miss Zabel was an English teacher, literature teacher, and I like that. And Ralph Badgley was a scientist, and I took a focus on him.
Tell me more about what kind of people they were, what their personalities were like.
Well, most of the people that came here, I can't say most, but several of the people who came here in the early years stayed. Ralph Badgley came here from, I'm not sure now where he graduated from college, but he had gotten a doctor's degree. And he came here early, say in 1932, around there. So he and his wife came to the band, and they lived here all their life.
There's a little park there.
It's okay.
And love this country. They like the mountainous areas. And you know, he did quite a bit of traveling in the mountains. And he and a fellow by the name of Steen, who was a psychology professor, in the summertime led the trips into the high mountains and some systems. And I was privileged to go with them.
Into the Wallawas, you mean? Mm-hmm. Or the Elkhorns?
Yeah. Yeah. They're all Elkhorns. Anyway, I've got my name on a paper up in the top of Eagle Cap.
Why is that?
Because that's what we all did. We got to the very top.
I see.
And signed the paper.
I was here.
Up there. Yeah, that's the
thing. You think it's still there?
Yeah.
What's it, is it kept in a box or a
I don't know.
Container?
I just know I find the box.
And that would have been what year, about?
Oh, 1937 or 38.
Did many women go on trips like that?
Oh, yes. And Dr. Steen and Dr. Badgley would get horse wrangler. They fell us who provided that trip, actually. The women and all that.
So you didn't have to cook?
No. It would be about 35 people.
Was Ralph Badgley a rough kind of man?
No.
No? Gentle?
Well, he had a really good sense of humor. And he was a man who inspired students. My brother stayed on after he finished his 2 years of pre-college, and there was a time that we at the college had some students there that were training or going into service, and future Air Force people and that sort of thing. My brother stayed on and tutored some math for them, and then when he went away, through the war, he was in a officer training program for a while at the University of Tennessee, and which was canceled about halfway through it, and another one into some other program. But when he came back to La Grande after the war, all the Eastern or the Western schools that he would have wanted to go to had their quota of GIs, so he asked Ralph Badgley what he thought he should do, and he said, why don't you go back to the University of Tennessee? You've got credits there, and they'll so he did, and he graduated there, and then signed on with the National Laboratories at Oak Ridge to spend his whole life there. But that's the kind of person Ralph actually was. He was thoroughly interested in the students, and he gave them good advice.
Were you involved in any way in the decision to name the science building after him?
No, but I was really pleased, and I want to make sure that if I could,
Not be changed.
Because he really deserved that.
Do you think he gave money toward it?
Yes, he did. In fact, I don't know about money, but he and his wife left their land. We had some old woodlands back here in the mountains, and they left that to the college.
Do you think the college still owns it?
Oh, yes.
Do they use it for anything?
Well, I don't know. Do you?
I don't either.
Do you know where it is?
It's up close to Roy Skeen's place.
Mm-hmm. My husband is Al Rudolph.
I've been up there.
I think it's just open forest land.
Yeah, but I don't know what's being used for
it. Why do you think he bought it?
Because he loved the land.
Yeah, he owned quite a lot of land.
And,
he
owned probably as an investment.
Except the apparently the investment didn't pay off.
Well, he had a cabin up there. He lived, spent their summer days up there. And I think he bought it fairly early on.
We owned land right through here, back of Grand Run Retirement Center, too.
Why did you know that? Well, their home wasn't far from
there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very nice people.
Tell me about Amanda Zabel, what kind of person she was.
Well, I never knew her as well. I enjoyed her very much as an instructor. And she never married. She was a very attractive woman personally, and very interesting in the classroom. She taught, like I said, English literature. But she had a lot to do with the beginning of the school. They had a Eastern was famous for program they had in the spring, this graduation time called Evensong.
Yes.
And that's just the right place for it, with those steps.
And she was involved with that?
She was involved in planning that.
How often did you attend Evensong?
Every year.
Every year? Well, you're one of the few people I've talked to who's actually there. I talked to Alice Moorhead about it, and she said, well, I don't know what they did. I didn't ever go.
She's my cable person.
Is she? Well, tell me what you remember about Evensong. I'm really interested to know what the details of that.
I just got through opening a box that I got those papers out of. It has an Evensong program. And, let's see. When the program, it was a musical program. When the program started, on the top of the stairs, the very top of the stairs, was the big sea which is attached to that. And as the program progressed, there's lots of singing. The seniors came down to the queen, who was located on that first level, and their flashlights were lighted by a torch. And the seniors went out into the world by going down on either side, and then the students, regular students, would fill in the top. It was very one of the songs about the day is dying in the wind, and it was about 7 o'clock.
Did it last for about 2 hours or so?
Hour and a half or so.
Because this was in June, wasn't it?
Yes.
So it would still be light by 8 or 8:30.
Yes. Uh-huh. And you see these students, or these seniors in their caps and gowns with their torches going on down the street.
I suppose there were speeches.
Oh, yes.
Who would talk?
Well, they had a regular... their program was all written out. Same every year.
Same speeches every year?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, more or less, I guess.
How was this different from a college commencement? Or was it the same thing?
Well, it was part of the general program for commencement. They had a Evensong queen in attendance.
I'm just wondering, though, if there was also a commencement.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
On a separate day. Mm-hmm. With all the graduates.
The seniors had to go off into the future twice.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a religious service in connection with the graduation, too?
No. Mm-hmm. No. At least I don't remember being baccalaureate. I
think of that as high school.
Some colleges have it, but maybe not the state colleges.
Probably not.
Just occurred to me, and now it's flitted from my mind. What was your understanding of the opinions that other people in the state had about Eastern in relation to the other colleges on the west side?
Well, we weren't the only one from the beginning of the world, normal school in college of education, because Ashland down in the Central State had Southern law, and then in Lama, which is down in the valley, was the Oregon, and that took in the rest of the state.
Yeah, I know about those.
But I don't know. I never felt.
What's going on here?
Just talking.
Okay. Having the interview, dude.
I wasn't aware of any feelings particularly of isolation or anything. We were assigned 11 counties in Eastern Oregon, so it's helpful. Eastern and Southern Oregon also had its share, so Oregon. And in fact, at least two of the presidents at Eastern went on to be president of Oregon at Monmouth.
Mm-hmm. And was that considered to be a step up?
Well, I don't know.
My understanding is that Eastern, over the years, has had a hard time getting the support that the West Side colleges had. Not as many students, therefore not as much money, and maybe some complaints about it that maybe to save money it should be closed. Did you ever hear anything about that?
That's come up, but I don't think it ever really took it seriously. Maybe that's because I myself thought that was a very foolish thing. But it seems to me that, particularly in the years when we had a very active president who was getting out around the area, sort of drumming for students and that sort of thing, she held her own pretty well.
Do you go up to visit the campus now occasionally?
Well, I was up there about a month ago to a meeting of the foundation, and which I'm still a member of. And I almost got lost.
It's changed a great deal.
Because it's changed a great deal. Particularly when it comes to parking.
That's right.
And I went up the day before to make sure that I knew where I was.
Did you by any chance go up to the dedication of the Baker tree a few weeks ago?
No, I didn't.
Do you know where it is?
No.
It's on that little knoll between Inlow and the former Dorian Hall, the first dormitory.
Oh.
There's a very old tree there. Mm-hmm. I was talking with a couple of people up there. One of them was David Yurgis from Miter's Touch downtown. And he says that area was a cemetery, a burial ground.
Right.
Do you know about that?
Yes.
What do you know?
Well, just that they had to dig up the graves in order to make a place for the school.
Do you know why it became a grave site?
Well, as I understand it, it wasn't a regular cemetery. Well, yeah, of course, a cemetery is a cemetery. But there was a large number of people buried up there.
who had died because of a flu epidemic.
During the 1917-1920
yeah.
period?
Mm-hmm. During the time when it was a kind of a national.
Well, LeGrand had a cemetery by that time, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Well, why would they be buried there?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Do you think somebody thought their bodies would infect other people?
Could be.
But Inlo was there at that time, wasn't it? No, it was in 29.
No.
There was nothing there.
It was the first, it opened in 1929.
Yeah.
So it was in the building process.
Were there other buildings up there before?
No.
Do you think it's possible that the Indians used it as a burial site?
I never had heard that.
David said he thought there was some evidence that bodies were just buried any old which way and there weren't any markers. Not in rows.
There probably weren't a lot of records.
And I don't know how many people were buried up there. At that time, I really don't remember because, I was just came to LeGrand to live with my grandmother and go to high school. And we lived down near where the city library is now. A couple of doors on Penn, and we were never up on that hill.
By the way, that reminds me. I've heard a number of people say that for a long time, and for many reasons, many people who live in LeGrand don't want to have anything to do with the college or the university. Is that true when you were working there?
Well, have you got a copy of that insert? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because I was just looking at it.
Yes, my friend.
There was a competition between the Umatilla County and the town of Pendleton and LeGrand and to get the college. And the governor of Oregon at that time was Walter Pierce, who was a Union County farmer. Well, I don't know how this was all worked out, but Governor Pierce was able to talk to the other people into letting it come here. And Mr. Inlow, who was the first president, was superintendent of schools at Pendleton. And of course, LeGrand people, they were so happy about having the college in, that they wanted to be involved in everything. And he was pretty standoffish. Not because I think that he were ill feelings, but this was a state college. This was not a Union College, a Union County College. And so he was not as involved as in community affairs and things like that as future president. The man from college, Charles Howard, had been state superintendent of public instruction before he came. And he was an outgoing type of person, and he was getting involved in the Rotary Club and all the things that go on downtown. And he was taking speaking engagements that were and because of what he did to sort of get the college and the town working together again, he was then sent on to Lana to be their president.
Was it your sense when you were working at the college that there was a close, friendly relationship between people at the college and people in the town?
It was beginning to be. He was only there 2 years.
But you were there for a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
What was your sense of the relationship?
Well, people downtown came up to college affairs and things like that, but they were not invited to be on any committees or anything like that. Frank Bennett, who he was quite a bit later. I went to work for him in 1955, and he was there for more than 12 years, if I remember right. But he was the kind of a person that finally got college people on various committees and all these things. And people downtown on college committees, and started a foundation for advanced spiritual church called the Bankers and all of it. You know what I mean?
Yes. I know you haven't been connected with the college for a number of years, but do you have any assessment of what the relationship is between now the university and the town currently?
I think it's fine. I still belong to the foundation. I was secretary of it for quite a while after I retired. But we've got lots. Not only are the connections good with the town, but they're good with the whole Eastern Oregon community. Other parts of the state on our alumni group.
Right. There's been a lot of effort in the last few years to make that happen.
Yeah.
What else should we ask her about, John?
Well, you covered a lot of area. You didn't mention Kaiser and Geyser and Quinn and
I should have.
Well, tell us about
them. They were among the first early Catholics, not the first Catholics. But Quinn was a coach for how many years? 20 years.
A lot of years. It seemed like that there was more prestige in the earlier professors like Dr. Lee Johnson and Kaiser and Geyser and more than
they were
outstanding people.
Yes, it does. It does. Bob Quinn was an outstanding coach, and he coached everything: basketball, football, baseball, and he had outstanding teams. And for the most, and they weren't. For the most part, weren't shipping them in. They were taking them from the Eastern Oregon area.
Sure.
And we have some awfully some very important people on our faculty right now, especially in the music department.
Dorothy Winters did a lot with her musical group to go around and recruit people to come to Eastern Oregon.
What did they call them?
I would bring that up, but I can't. My youngest son was a member.
You're here always. Well, anyway, she was the dean of women. Sort of had charge of the dormitories. An excellent person. Very attractive personally and professionally. And she'd take the, get a group of students together and they'd go and visit other towns. Her group of people did quite a lot to get students.
Of these older faculty members and staff members that you knew, which one of them might be the best choice if a new building were built and to be named after one of them?
Well, I personally think that when they named Ackerman Hall after some well-known educator, that it should have been named Miller Hall. because John Miller was here from the very beginning, and he was head of the education department.
Wasn't he the first principal of the school?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the current principal named John Miller, too?
Yes. Now,
how about that?
Well, he's the new superintendent, isn't he, of the district?
Not the school district.
I don't know.
Oh, no, he's the head of an education. I just read it.
So we need a Miller Hall.
We need a Miller Hall. Of course, nobody around remembers John more. He was he's a very kind man, and in the early years when I felt myself getting in maybe what would be called trouble or something, I'd go to John as sort of a mentor.
Now, and did you know or know much about Kate House?
Yes, I remember.
You know, what do you remember about her?
Well, she was the first principal.
First principal,
in fact. Yeah, she was a very intelligent person. She has relatives here in Cole at the present time.
She's buried in Cole, too.
Is she?
Mm-hmm. I saw her grave.
She was quite matter of fact. She's hard to describe. My sophomore year in college, I was working on the NYA in 1924, and we got 25 cents an hour there. I worked for Kate House here in office. She didn't have an office in the Akron again. Akron was being built.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very nice. She didn't work any too hard.
What did you do?
But she was
office work?
Office,
yes. Somebody told me she was too smart for her own good.
Well, I didn't say that, but I might have. I think it was a woman who was a little bit bossy.
Oh, bossy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I can understand her because she was very intelligent and she had quite a bit of good experience. Well, she just wasn't going to be run over.
She didn't hesitate to tell people what she thought they should do.
That's right.
They better do it.
What she thought.
You mentioned the war and when the cadets were here.
Mm-hmm.
And about how many cadets? Do you remember? I don't.
I don't think I ever knew how many they had, but they took up almost the whole Savage William Hotel, which is no longer here.
I understand they would march from the hotel up the hill to the college.
Oh, yes, and they marched up the hill to the college about a block from my mother's house, and my children got scared and would cry.
Well, how did it work with the college classes and then the cadet training going on at the same time?
The college enrollment was quite a bit reduced at that time as far as the regular students were concerned because all these girls, some of the girls who were going off to war. The cadets were noticeable in certain classes, as I remember, they weren't taking regular college courses. They weren't having to bother with English and some of this other stuff that you have to take.
Math and science, maybe, probably.
With math and science, maybe. And they hired special faculty. Now, that's how Carlos Easton came.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's another one that I should mention. He was the one first. in the forest or in the because of the field map. He is just retired.
I know him.
Oh, do you really? Yes. Oh, he's a child.
Yes.
One of my favorites. In fact, I used to pay him respect until I found out that he was only much older than
so. Well, I suppose I should tell you that I was a student at the college when you were working there.
Oh, really?
In 1951. I didn't meet you, though. I don't think I ever went into Inlow Hall. I was here for just 6 months, getting a teaching certificate.
Well, you're the son-in-law of Nora.
Right? Yes.
Well, I'll tell you that Dr. Gilbert, the president, he got me to on one of my trips down to Fort Stevens in the summer when we were, my husband and I were park hosting, Baldwin Park State Park, Fort Stevens, and John Miller was living down coast.
Yeah,
so, President and Gilbert got me to go down and interview him because maybe we'd have a history of the college someday. And I had the most interesting visit with him. He told me a lot of things about working for the college and some of the people that I never knew. I still got the tape.
You didn't write about it?
No, I didn't. Nobody, well, there was a student a couple of years ago that wrote about the first 10 weeks he knew about it. And I gave her all the information.
Have you shared the tape with anybody who's at the university now?
No, I haven't. Would you like to?
Would you like to let us listen to
it? I don't know where it is. I just moved. 3 weeks ago up here, and I shut up a house I lived in for 52 years.
Did you store a lot of the stuff you had there?
Well, the tape recorder was there. I don't know. Maybe my family, my four children, moved me out. We took 3 loads of two dumpsters. But I don't think that was it.
So could you get them to help you find it?
I think so. It may be in that box.
We should not lose it.
No.
And that would have been when that you did the interview?
Well, he retired in 1978, so it would have been early 80s.
I certainly hope you can find it.
Yes.
Is it labeled?
Yes.
Is it one tape? And he's dead now.
Yes.
So that tape is valuable. Did you know about it?
No, I didn't know about the tape. I knew John Miller. In fact, I ran into him down at the coast one time. While we were down there. Can't remember the name of the town down there. I went to use the telephone, and here was John. We had quite a conversation down there.
Well, he was living with his sister.
Uh-huh.
Well, what other people do you know of who are still living and who spent considerable time at Hoosier College, either as staff members or faculty?
Well, I might have to think about that. Jack and Dorothy Evans are
yes.
One that comes to mind.
Yes.
Just off the top of my mind.
Lee Johnson, of course,
well,
is still here.
Lee's been a friend of mine for years. In fact, I think I lost my temper at the time. He even though his independence office was on the left side of the hallway and the mailbox was on the other side. Every once in a while he'd come in and sit down and relax for a little bit. One day he came in and he was just furious. Because I put out a notice as a request from the faculty members and so forth. Classes were going to be changed. And he hadn't looked in his box lately and didn't get the notice. And he was giving me a bad time. Finally, I took a communication and I said, told him to shut up. That I had put that notice out as being doing a favor for Roy's team. I wasn't going to take the place. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking later then that, you know, I really shouldn't have done that. So that afternoon, I went up to his office and knocked on the door. And he came to the door and I said my little apology and so forth. They picked, don't you ever do that to me again. They nearly scared the life.
This big man?
Do you know me?
No, I have not met him.
Oh, you must introduce him.
Well, do you think he would talk to us?
Right now, I'm not sure. Betty,
oh, I don't know.
Betty is real sick in the wildflower. And Lee has fallen lately down at his house. And I'm very concerned about it. And I just was down there this last week. You know how Lee is. He's quite emotional. I just don't know. I wish I could say, Eugene, I don't know.
Sounds like you're the person to achieve it if it's possible.
Yes.
Dick Hermans and I have been real good friends. And so is Jack Evans. You know, you might talk to Jack about it.
Rudy Brown knows him quite well, too.
Yeah. But Lee, like Betty says, is a very opinionated man. You know, he used to write newspaper articles under different names and send them to the newspapers around the locality.
And take right one?
Well, told him what he thought.
He's a brand product. Not many of our faculty are. And he was talking about brand product. And I don't know anybody that's quite like Lee, do you?
No. I'm glad he's my friend. I would not want him as my enemy. He always wanted to be a railroader. But he had a bad back.
I know he made a specialty of the history of railroads.
Yes. Pretty interesting. I'm sure sorry he's having problems.
Oh, I am too. His wife had to have a foot after
him. We were fortunate enough, his first wife, Clarice, before she died, the Hermans family and the Turners and the Johnsons spent that New Year's just before she died together. It was a special time.
I can give you an address if you're interested, if somebody who has been involved, heavily involved in the Baker family history. His wife, who is now deceased, her mother was my grandmother's sister, so one of the 10 children.
What kind of information do you think she'd have?
Well, they've got a computer, and they've traveled back and forth across the United States, and they've given all quite a bit of information recently to the Salt Lake Mormon
Depository. Our project is not concentrating particularly on genealogy. It's more on how people lived and the contributions that they made.
And it sounds as though Jane Slater and then the, what was it, did you say, was his son or nephew, was the architect?
John.
John? Yes.
John never married.
Okay, well,
what I mean.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. Yeah. But,
I didn't know him at all. I have a lot of pictures that are not labeled.
Some
albums.
A lot of people not, didn't.
And there's a man in who's on the college faculty now, but maybe he's retired. His name's Doyle Spade. And he came from the Midwest, and I don't think they're related. I think his family came, were Mormons when they came to the United States. But anyway, he received a telephone call from someone in California who said that he was a truck driver. And in cleaning out his truck, he ran across a box with an album in it. And it had the name Slater. And and the man offered to send it to him. So he said, send it to him. Well, after he received it, the first time, when he opened the box and opened the album, here was a picture of James D. Slater of the Grand Oregon. It's the pictures in the next picture. He was an attorney who was mayor, had been appointed mayor of the Grand. Well, I knew it as soon as he opened the book and I saw the picture of Mr. Slater, and that was my Uncle Jim, who I used to do a little office work for once in a while. And Judge Fountain had bought his practice for taking over. Mm. In 1935. But anyway, here was this beautiful album with the nicest looking people. Not a name on anything. And my Uncle Jim Slater had no children. Now whether this was, and they didn't look like his side of the family. And I didn't know I knew his wife, but I knew nothing about her family. And that certainly ended in a dead end.
Yes.
So I gave the album to Doyle so he could do what he wanted to. But there's another part of my grandmother was married to Alpha Taylor Neal from Tennessee. And how she met him and everything, I don't know. But anyway, in the beginnings of Union County, the town of Union, my grandfather was a reporter for this. And when they moved to the county seat to LaGrande, he moved his family to Newbridge, Oregon, which was a little town that no longer exists. I don't think it's in Baker County, which is out near Richmond. They had a farm up there. Well, in November 19, they were married in 1983. And my mother, their oldest child, was born in 1985. But in 1895, he came from Newbridge to Union in November to get winter supplies. And he never got home. They found his body caught in the lines. The supplies were not there. And there's always been this mystery about what we were doing. And so my grandmother came back to LaGrande the family moved her back to La Grande. And she had four children. And her brother built her a house, the one that's 1104. And she taught school and gave music classes for three of her children in college. And retired a year early. But she had quite a full life. She taught at school and she gave music lessons on weekends.
Nothing but work.
But I thought sometime I ought to go over to take her and see if they've got any kind of news of what they what was released in the paper. But there's not any clippings or anything that I've ever found.
I'm just about to the end of my tape, so maybe we should say we'll stop this time, but if you think of other things you'd like to tell us about the university especially, I'd be glad to come back.
Well, I don't have... My memory is not as good as it was.
We can all admit to that.
Well, I might have some other things that you don't have.
Particularly if you find...